If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Are we on the air? Is this happening?
I believe we are.
All right. Well, let me just say this. I am I'm Mark Harmon. You're Brian Altimer. We're sitting in for Matt Bubala. I love the overnight. I feel so at free in the other. Bye, Patty. See you soon. Yeah. Hi, Shante. How are you? Can you say hi on the air? I like hearing your voice on the radio. Take your time. Badish, say hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
I'll take
so good to be with you on the overnight.
Good to be with you. We're gonna have a pretty heavy show here, so we're gonna have a little fun to start. First of all, before we get into what's going on in the city, Brian Altimer, I barely know you. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Since you've been in the building and since I've seen how hard you work, I've just respected what you do around here. So. It's a privilege for me to get to host with you, and I guess this is your first hosting experience on WGN, so congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and thanks for teaming up with me tonight. And
it is most definitely my pleasure. I even wore my Marines little fleecy, not a fleece, a dry fit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I got to spend a week with Patty out in Cali. For learning what the Marines do, and you're a former Marine,
yeah.
So you're like an actual superstar of a human being, and you're working with a slouch over here.
Oh no, we're all on equal playing field.
No, I don't think we are. Okay, I appreciate that, but I don't think we are. You being a Marine puts you up a level, so I think that's great. You earned that. So I saw the Crucible. I saw what you guys do to get that done, and you served our country for how many years did you serve the country?
4 years, and then 4 years off, and got called back to go to Iraq back in 2002. So it's been one wild ride for me. So like I said, it's good to be here on WGN. It looks a lot different at night because normally I'm here during the day behind the glass with Ro, and I'm all in his ear, and now I'm kind of like in the spot, and it feels great. It feels great.
Well, and again, congratulations. And yes, you work every day on the RoCon show, and I know that you stay behind the scenes mostly there, but you guys start cooking that up. The minute the show ends at 7, you're already thinking about the next day, and I know you guys start early all day long putting it all together, and you do a ton of work for the show. So
yeah.
I hope you celebrate the successes that you guys are having.
Can I ask Brian one thing?
Sure, Roger.
Because here's another aspect of Brian. Because Brian is a very multi-talented individual.
True.
And I wanted to know if that opening music was from you, Brian. Because
no,
Brian mixes.
I wish it was, but it's not.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering.
I mean, I can get some music for you, though, Roger.
I know you can. I've seen some of your stuff. I've heard some of it.
Roger, are you trying to act cooler than you actually are?
No, I see his stuff on Facebook all the time.
So you're kind of like a music hip dude? I didn't know that, Roger Badish.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I want to hook up Brian with one of my former students who has his own studio near, I was about ready to say Comiskey Park, The Cell. And has worked with Common and some of the other artists from the Chicago area. I'd like to hook you up, Brian.
Wait, hold on a second. Roger, can I ask you a personal question? How old are you?
64.
You just dropped Common like it was just like something you said all the time. Did you hear the way he said?
Yeah.
I hook you up with Common. I'm like, what?
Yeah. I've got one of my former students has his own studios, and he's in New York right now, in fact. He's traveled all over the country, and... works on a lot of productions, and his brother does the music videos and is working on some movies right now. Both of them have 2 Emmy Awards to their credit from when they were my students. So,
All right.
Well, I can't wait for that.
That'd be good. I'll get you the hookup. No problem.
Cool. All right. So, hey, let's get into what's going on in our city today. We have a young man, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Paul O'Neill. And apparently, if you put the timeline together, he went out to Bolingbrook and stole a Jaguar, which is a pretty bold move, right?
Very bold move. you know, jumping in his head, that's the last thing I want to do is go sell a Jaguar.
Right. I'm gonna head out of the city. I'm gonna go to the burbs. I'm gonna find a Target. I'm gonna steal a Jaguar, and then you're gonna drive it back into the city, and you end up in a high speed chase. Now, the guess here is that Paul O'Neill did not want to go to jail, right?
No.
So he's young and dumb and confident / cocky and perhaps talented with driving a vehicle. If you watch the video of it, which we'll get into, we've got a bunch of audio for you here. I mean, he's slithering around pretty creatively with, I mean, it's almost like we got a race car driver on our hands a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And so we get in a high speed chase, and Paul O'Neill ends up out of the car on foot, hopping over fences, and eventually gets gunned down by an officer whose body camera did not work at that point. All right, and we've got 9 videos that have been released by the Chicago Police Department and our new superintendent, you know, way to get thrown right into the fire, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you had a news conference today, and you had Paul O'Neill's sister, Brianna Adams, 22 years old, talking about how, you know, her brother had plans. He had graduated high school. He was going to go to trade school, wanted to work for ComEd. And this all happened, by the way, July 28th, 7:30 at night, right? I mean, if you watch the video, plenty of sunlight. It's not, you know, we're not talking 2 in the morning here.
Right.
And not that that necessarily matters of anything, but, you know, it's midday. And so you've got the police department trying to be transparent, but yet we don't have the video of the actual shooting,
right.
which really throws a stench over the whole thing, even though we have all these videos, right?
Right. And that's the big problem. As you said before, like all these videos and the one critical piece that can, in a sense, put all this to bed is missing. Now, jumping in his head, you know, we all were 18 once. We all did stupid stuff. And in his head, he's probably not thinking, these cops are going to shoot me or shoot at me. Let me run, and maybe I get away and be able to do something else, or maybe not do anything else again. But, you know, when you do things like that, you know, as an 18-year-old kid, you're not really thinking about the next day, let alone years from now, what harm that can do if you get caught and go to jail, you know, because it is Grand Theft Auto if you get caught and go to jail and get convicted. That's one of the biggest things that, you know, as a black man, when I look back on it now, all the stupid stuff that I did, I'm so glad that I had the right people around me to kind of guide me away from all the negative energy, you know, that was in Inglewood, because that's where I grew up at. I grew up in Inglewood, in the heart of Inglewood, and saw a lot of stuff. And I was just one of the lucky ones that just happened to make it out.
What was your parenting situation?
I had both of my parents at home. My father, he worked a lot. My mom worked a lot too. And I had my older sister that was always around. So we were pretty close-knit. And I think me seeing friends that fell to violence in the 90s, because even in the 90s, like early to mid-90s, you know, we had the whole violence problem then, you know. But
we've had it forever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just something that in this town, for some reason, it was always there. Now, more so, it's more prevalent, maybe because of social media. that plays a big part into it. But this particular case, there are so many pieces that need to be put together, and that one piece is just missing, and that's the problem I have with this whole thing.
Well, okay, and we do have some pieces here, so let's go through the audio that's been released. Well, first of all, let's start with the chase, and so we hear the young man Paul O'Neill is going by a police vehicle, and he's being shot at. So, and again, this video has been released by the police department. So that you could hear him saying, shots fired by the police.
Yeah.
Okay, but when you watch the video, the officer is coming around his car and firing at the vehicle, which is headed, which direction, I'm not sure, doesn't matter, whatever. He's call it north, and there are officers coming down. So really that officer was actually shooting, his bullets could have hit another officer, and there weren't any shots coming out of the car, and there was a lot of confusion around that.
Correct, and that's the problem I have with me, you know, being in the service. You know, that's the last thing you want is to be shot by your fellow man, and I can see from their point of view why that officer would think that he was getting fired at, that was sitting in that vehicle, because you have bullets coming toward you along with a car that's going however miles an hour and it hits you. So right there, the minute that gun goes off, it sets off a whole domino effect, you know, because at that point, if I'm the officer that's receiving those bullets, I'm going to pull my gun out too.
Right. And in that scenario, too, they were trying to wall him in, and he was able to get through. And as he got through, that's when the officer got out of the car and started firing at him. Now, there was an SUV police vehicle coming down at his vehicle, and that's when they crashed. O'Neill jumps out of the car and proceeds to try to run through the neighborhood, goes over a fence, and then the officer follows him, gets over a fence, and then shoots him in the back. And he's wounded, he's on the ground, and we pick up the audio there. So they're asking for emergency, EMS stands for Emergency Medical Situation?
Service.
EMS. Thank you, Roger. Yeah. I should know that, by the way. But so they have him on the ground. They're calling for an ambulance. They're calling for more help for an officer. And you also heard him say that he shot at us, which that's what he thinks, but it's actually not accurate.
Right. And that's where things start to get a little murky. You know, when you're not sure who shot who, as a police officer, you should, the last thing you should have to do is fire your weapon. And if you do fire that weapon, you better be sure that you're being fired upon or your life is in imminent danger. And that's just hands down. You have to, you know, that's something that has to happen.
Right, and in this case, I mean, we don't have the actual video of the final moments of Paul O'Neill's life, but he was shot in the back, so he's running away. Now, again, I'm not, you're talking about somebody who's going out to the suburbs, stealing a Jaguar, getting a high-speed chase. That is not recommended activity. And when we were both talking about this before the show, Brian, we're saying, you know, what's in his mind, what's his mindset? coming back here, you know, it, to me, it's pretty obvious that he's, you know, going to take every last chance to not go to jail.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably what's going on, right? I mean, that's the most logical scenario that we could, that, I mean, that, that makes any form of sense.
I mean, nobody wants to go to jail. I mean, if, I mean, as a 38-year-old male, I don't want to go to jail. So at 18, the last thing you want to do is go to jail. And when you do something like that, reality doesn't hit you until, you know, the police show up when you do something that stupid. That's when reality just smacks you in the face, and then your mind's like, oh my God, this can happen to me, you know. And again, he's not thinking I may get shot, but unfortunately, this is what, that's what happened.
Which is kind of, I mean, at that point, he's already been shot at when he's running, right?
Right.
So I think, you know, clearly that if he was thinking that, well, this has happened, at some point you would think perhaps cut your losses here. You're in a really, I mean, at that point, listen, man, they're shooting at you. You don't want to, I don't know how you get, maybe it feels like there is no way out. I don't know. The officer standing over him, let's get cut three here, Shante, and they're trying to sort out what happened because, you know, they're standing over this guy who's on the ground. He's handcuffed. He's bleeding. And so now they're recapping, and we start to hear the confusion.
And they shot at us too, right?
I shot at the car after it almost hit you.
I'm a f***er. Are you okay, all
right? Well, I just asked for your foot on my butt.
So you can see they're trying. He shot at us too, right? Right? They don't know.
Right.
And I mean, that's not.
That's the mistake. That's the biggest mistake right there. You fire that weapon, you better be damn sure that you were justified in firing that weapon. Period.
Right.
And that's the problem right there.
And then we continue on. You know, as they try to continue to sort it out.
He almost hit my partners. I shot at him.
Hold on, we're looking over. Hold on.
Okay. Hey, anyone pick up an ASP over here?
Okay, so he says he almost hit his partner in the car when he's driving. I'm assuming that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And then here's cut five, where he starts to worry about the repercussions of what just happened, because it's clear that perhaps he never shot.
I shot. I don't know who was shooting in the alley. What's going on? Man, I'm going to be on a desk for 30 damn days now. Desk duty for 30 days now. Mother, I shot. He almost hit him. On straight.
So he's not really worried about this guy's life. He's worried about the fact that he's going to be on the desk for 30 days.
Right, and that's part of the problem, too. But one of the things I can grab from that, too, from an officer standpoint and from what they do every day, that he likes being out on the street. This is something that they do it every day. They put their lives in danger on a daily basis to protect and serve. So you can grab it either way. It's unfortunate that he said it right there, because at that point, it gives off that notion that all he's worrying about is himself and his career.
Well, I don't think it's gray at all. I think he was worried about himself and his career at that point.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's call it that's how I see it. I'm sure there's part of him that doesn't want the dude to die, I would think. But right there, he's thinking about himself. And I think he's clearly questioned himself, and he's worried that his job is going to be impacted. He doesn't want to be sitting at a desk. He likes being on the street.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. We'll get to, solutions, thoughts on how we can move it forward. And we have more audio, too. Let's take a quick time out. Love to hear your thoughts. on what's going on in the city and your reaction to young man, 18-year-old, being shot at by the police, shot in the back, killed. And, you know, we've got protests going on in the city, and we're here again. We just left here, and we're back, and this is not going to be the last time either, right? So quick timeout, get you news on time at 2:30 in 1 minute on 720 WGN. WGN. I'm Mark Carman. He's Brian Altimer. We are your overnight entertainment. Hope you're having a great start to your weekend. Shantae producing, Roger doing the news, and we are talking about the latest shooting in Chicago and the fallout from Paul O'Neill. And our we've been going through the audio. We've done that. We're going to read your text in a second here, and we'll take calls. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. I mean, let me just give my overall thoughts on the situation. Like, listen, you go out to the suburbs, you steal a car, you drive it back in the city, you get in a high-speed chase, you're putting your own life in danger. You're putting officers' lives in danger. You're putting people on the street in danger, all of that. But you're not armed. You're running away from an officer who should be trained. Bottom line, Paul O'Neill, he should not be dead right now. I think that's pretty clear from everything we've gathered. So there's a lot of gray in this, and I wouldn't in any way, shape, or form want to be in a situation where I was a police officer trying to chase somebody like that down. I mean, that's a nightmare. And I give the police huge props for doing the job that they do. It's a job that I would never want to do. Brian, I mean, you can speak to it better than me. I mean, you understand the line of work much better than I have, being a former Marine or actually a Marine.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, It is a job that is very hard to do, because you have to be so precise at a moment's notice. And I feel for both sides. You know, it's hard to say, okay, I feel for this side and not this side. I feel for both sides. I feel the side of the police officer, because they're once again getting put in this spotlight.
Yep.
And it makes them harder to do their job, especially when they may have a legit offender, and now they have to second guess themselves on what they should do to combat that problem. And then they become more of a reactionary force, especially like on the south and west sides, because you need police to be proactive and not reactive. The minute you make them reactive, the only thing they're coming to do is to clean up the mess. You know, we need the police to be there to prevent shootings, not come after the shootings. So I think that they've been being put in a very, very tight spot. So I think that there are things that can be done on both sides. We just have to find that middle. And the minute we find that middle, we'll be able to do things a lot better here.
312-981-7200. Jim is a former police officer and joining us now on WGN. Thank you, Jim. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Just want a couple quick things. One, first and foremost, these officers, by the way, knew that they were being recorded. So you have to understand that once they get a little clarity in the situation, they're going to need to say things or do things either on the radio or on tape to kind of couch what happened in their own terms, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it didn't seem like they did a great job of doing that, though, Jim. They were sounding real confused.
Well, they were, and you got to understand the situation. You know, they're obviously just coming down from a whole bunch of adrenaline, and your mind is a little unclear at the time. But they, you know, they were like, "Hey, he was shooting at us, right?" You know, that kind of thing. But nevertheless, I mean, you know, they're going to say what they have to say as best they can say it. But nevertheless, to that point of reactive, the police being a reactive force, back in the 80s, when I was first testing for police departments, there came across something from the Department of Justice. It was a new type of written testing, a profile test, that the Department of Justice was passing out to various departments. It was actually offering money or other incentives to departments to take this test and add it into their curriculum. And when I was taking these tests, a good friend of mine and I were going around to different departments at the time trying to get on the police list, which is very common practice. You know, every department that's got a job that opens up, you go for it, you know, and you keep trying till you get one. And so I was always passing the polygraph test. I was always passing the physical agility test. You know, I was young and strong and fast and all that. And so as was he, but neither of us were getting on. And we were always taking the same profile test. It was a written test. And we couldn't figure out why we weren't getting on. We were answering everything truthfully, and, you know, we were kind of confused. Just by chance, one night, I ran into a guy in a bar who was a disgruntled former employee of the company that wrote the testing for the Department of Justice. And he, you know, had signed an agreement not to say anything, but after a few drinks, he, you know, told everything. And he was asking a question. One of the questions, and I remembered this from the test, was I would rather, A, go to a party with lots of drinking, illicit drug use, and, you know, a few other things like that, or B, stay home and read a good book on American history. Well, just in my character, in my nature, I said I'd prefer to stay home and read a good book on American history. And he looked at me and he said, wrong answer. If you want to get on a police department, you've got to change your answers. You have to go the other way around. And he explained to me what it was all about. And I've since run into other guys who had the same problem during this time. They were looking to change from Andy of Mayberry, and that's what this gentleman specifically said. They don't want Andy of Mayberry. They want the action man. They want G.I. Joe. They want the adrenaline man. And the guy who will react and, you know, get the job done, basically. They wanted the macho guy, the type A alpha dog. And myself and my partner changed our answers, and we were hired immediately. And, you know, I felt bad about doing it, but I was like, well, you know, I had to play this game, I guess. So after being on the department for 10 years, I started seeing the fruits of what was coming out of the academy. And what we were seeing were guys who were alpha dogs. They were aggressive, adrenaline-filled. Whereas I was, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I was a great officer. I made my share of mistakes, especially. But whereas I would, you know, I'd the type of guy that would pull over, I'd see an old lady, you know, pulling a cart full of groceries down the street. And if I had nothing going on, I'd pick her up and say, hey, I can take you home. They don't want that. They want the guy who's going to come in guns blazing, and swing first. And my thing was, I was a peace officer. I had my share of battles, but, you know, I was a peace officer, and my idea was to walk up on a situation and calm it down, not heat it up.
Jim, appreciate your service here. Just kind of bottom lining it here. When you hear the audio of this chase, I mean, what do you think should happen? What's your like bottom line 20-second reaction to it?
Car theft is not a capital crime. And there comes a time when you have to think twice about pulling your gun out and shooting. When a guy is running away from you, he's not an immediate threat. And I don't want to second-guess these officers really, but I know what I would do in that situation. And unless the guy is running around firing a weapon, I wouldn't have shot him. I wouldn't have pulled my weapon. Well, I'd have my weapon pulled, but I wouldn't have shot the guy in the back.
Right.
That's just me.
And did you enjoy being a police officer, Jim?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I left the department because I got remarried, and my second wife, who I love very much and I'm still married to, didn't want to be married to a policeman. And now, looking back, I sometimes think I made the right choice.
happy wife.
Yeah, I guess so. I love being a police officer.
What are you doing now, Jim?
Right now, I'm working as a I'm working with the O'Hare Modernization Program.
Okay.
Hey. And I'm doing doing that now and loving that too. So
beautiful. Hey,
right.
Appreciate that. Was a I feel like we have to have a podcast from you, Jim. Though there was a lot of information there, but we appreciate the call, man, and thank you for everything there.
Thank you.
So that is Jim. Now, does that ring true to you? Because it rings true to me.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, and I don't want to go too far off the reservation here, but
it's okay. We
back when I was like dating like a lot, I would run into a lot of girls that date. That used to date police officers, and they all had like the same type of story. And after hearing Jim, it kind of rings true, like the whole alpha male thing. And I'm like, okay, I kind of get it now. You know, there are certain situations where you want that, but not in every particular situation.
But he's saying that that's what they're that. The department is looking for adrenaline junkies.
Well, you can't have that. There's no way you'll have this type of stuff happening all the time, you know, shootings. I mean,
but do you think that that's what they're looking for?
Yes and no. I mean, you do have areas in the city where you need that. You need that gusto. You need that type of cop.
Right.
You know, and in certain areas you don't need it. So,
but I'm guessing that the way he's talking about the testing and what they're looking for, I'm guessing that's spot on. I don't know if it's changed over time. I mean, he took the test a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, judging by you know what we see and what we hear about often.
Well, yeah, and we see it now more often because of camera phones now too. So.
Well, that's you know that's obviously changing the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Or so. At least changing at least how much we find out about the game.
Yeah, definitely. So I believe them.
And you're well. We'll get to this in a second. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's also the text line. 630. I somewhat agree. Yes, the police need to be accountable. This non-compliance BS needs to end. Yeah, it sucks to be told what you can and can't do. As a former military person, you probably had a moment or two in basic when you said to yourself, what did I sign up for? But you need to listen to the police. You can't just say, you know, I'm going to do whatever I want to do.
That's true. There are times when, especially in basic and in boot camp, when you first, in the Marine, you step on those yellow footprints, you get there. And you're getting yelled at, and I'm 6'3", and you got somebody about 5'2" yelling at you and telling you what you're gonna do, not what you should do, but what you're gonna do. And you're like, okay, do I have to listen to this person? And
the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
The answer is that. 312-981-7200. Nora, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Nora.
Oh, hi. I was just wondering, all these people that have talked from the beginning of my life, I still don't know what the boundaries of Inglewood are. This includes my parents, and by the way, that man that you're sitting with, he's a Marine Corps vet, or, well, not active duty Marine, but never, ever say former Marine.
Never again. Marine Corps vet Brian Altimer right here, Nora. I got you.
That's right. I mean, you know, you could go at night in the cemetery and they'd just be rolling. All the little Marines.
Okay, well, I'm wearing a Marine little wet dry right now, Nora. I'm respecting.
Okay.
So my bad though. I got you. What's the actual boundaries of Inglewood?
Yeah, because I don't know if I can even go in. I think at one point in my life I lived in there, in some part of Inglewood. Well, is it East District?
Nora, we're gonna look it up for you. But I mean, I'm not exactly
just the general,
sure.
General North, South, East, West.
Brian,
it's like South. If you're, it goes as far as. Let's see here. I'm looking at the map here. Garfield, about as north as Garfield, and about as south as, let's see here, 76 and Parnell is about as far south it goes, and it's about as west as...
Parnell, isn't it an East Street?
It's west of there.
Okay.
No, yeah. Nora, we appreciate you. Are you good? You feel satisfied? No, you need more?
Yeah, I just wish I could go out at night. I did live in that neighborhood, but it was just starting to get gangs.
Okay. Well, you be safe out there, Nora. Don't be doing crazy things late at night. Just listen to the radio. Call us. Well,
what I did, I'll tell you what I did. My son never had a gun growing up.
Uh-huh.
When he went into the Army, he called me up and said, "Mom, they let us use guns today." And I said, "That's great. When are they going to let you have bullets?" He wanted to join the Marines. I said, "They're trained killers. When you're 21, you can join the Marines." When he was 21, I said, "Are you going to join the Marines?" He said, "No. They all quit, keep the rank, and come over here."
Thank you, Nora.
All right.
Have a great night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Nora. You know, we were talking about guns and bullets. That was part of the conversation we were having before the show, that, you know, one thought is that you would arm police officers with rubber bullets, which would hurt and would stop somebody from running, but it wouldn't kill them. But then you also have assault rifles on the street, and now you're going to have a cop with rubber bullets. That's not going to work.
Yeah, and it's one of those things like, what do you do to stop these accidental shootings and
or non-accidental?
It could be non-accidental too. But the taser is one of the things that always comes to mind when you hear about this type of shooting. Is how come the taser wasn't used first, especially if this kid was running? I mean, he clearly was running. I don't want to say if he clearly was running. I think everything would have been totally dissolved if a taser was used or any other type of non-lethal force. With that being said, you know, when we were talking upstairs about it and I brought up the fact of rubber bullets, that may not be the best idea because, again, we are in Chicago, and you have gangs out here that have assault rifles, shotguns, and whatnot. So, it's just some things you have to know what type of force you're going to use. You know, it's kind of hard to jump into a cop's head, especially when the adrenaline is pumping. When that adrenaline is pumping, you know, maybe the cop he has some level of fear as well.
I'm sure.
Yeah, because he doesn't know, you know, if that kid's going to turn around and shoot. I mean, there was a police shooting that was released a few months ago, and it was on the Chicago Tribune, and I saw where the kid was running from the police, but in one of the frames, you see this kid, as he's running, he turns around and he shoots at the cop. He doesn't hit him, but he turns around and shoots. So, and one of the things that, you know, I hear a lot of police say is that with the gangs, it's more of a offense for them to lose that gun than it is to get caught. So they rather shoot at the police than lose that gun, you know. So I don't know. It's a tough call, and that's why I really respect police, because they have a super hard job to do. And today, in my mind, it just got harder with the release of this video.
Well, okay. I mean, you're on the street at night. You're a bouncer in Wrigleyville. In Wrigleyville, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you see a whole lot of stuff. I mean, you're standing outside at what, 1, 2, 3 in the morning?
Around those times in the morning. And it's crazy. And there was a shooting on Belmont and Sheffield earlier this morning. And, well, yesterday morning, I might as well say now. Two people were shot. Both were shot in the leg. And what was crazy was that the people that did get shot were people that I've seen pretty much every day walking up and down the street, but they do I call them actors. They do certain activities that they shouldn't do. you know, and one of the victims was 16 years old. And the first thing that went through my mind, because the shooting happened around 3:15.
Who shot him?
Well, from witnesses, they were saying it was a SUV that shot at him.
Okay, so not the police.
You know, it wasn't the police, no, right. not at all.
Right.
But one of the things that I did notice was that one of the victims was 16, and it was about 3:15, 3:20 in the morning. I'm thinking, why is a 16-year-old out on the street of Chicago at 3 o'clock in the morning? And that all comes down to parenting.
Yep.
And it all starts at home. So you have to start at home when it comes to raising your kids. And another factor into, you know, in a sense, why violence is so prevalent in, you know, the black communities is, and I have to say it, is urban radio. And urban radio is, in my opinion, is highly responsible, you know, to what, you know, we as a people hear. You know, if you turn on any urban radio station right now, if you was to switch the dial.
Don't do that.
Don't do it. But if you did, you know, the first thing you hear is sex, 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 murder, 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 money, money, money. And that's pumped into the heads of these kids 24/7. And if they're not hearing it on the radio, it's on the internet. If it's not on the internet, it's Twitter, it's Facebook Live. You hear it all day. And for a kid that's living in Inglewood that doesn't have a father, that's poor, and their only way of getting money is through selling drugs or, you know, or whatever other illegal activity, and they're hearing that on the radio on a constant daily basis. And they see that somebody like a Chief Keef, all he does is promote that type of violence, and they figure, okay, this guy made it, and he's promoting violence. He's getting in trouble. Nothing's happening to him. I'll do the exact same thing. And the reality is, you know, you may not get that record deal. You may not get on that basketball team. You may not make the NBA. So, I honestly think that urban radio really needs to take a look at itself and figure out what they should do, because, you know, the purpose of radio is to provide a public service. And right now, urban radio is doing a very poor public service.
Continue the conversation right after the 3 o'clock news. A 2-minute timeout, get you in the news with Roger, and then we'll be back talking with you on 720 WGN. WGN. Hope you're enjoying your overnight. Maybe you had a really successful evening. You know what I mean. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Brian Altimer. We are sitting in for Matt Bubala tonight. Conversation's a little bit on the serious side because we've got serious things going on in our city. We are going to have a little fun with the presidential election and a one, the Don, who, as I like to call him. And I did spend an inordinate amount of time watching the opening ceremonies of the Olympics tonight. So, and you sat down and had an interview with Dwayne Wade's wife, right?
Yeah, that was eye opening.
Okay, so we're gonna sneak all that in before 5 o'clock. So we have started with the shooting of Paul O'Neill, 18-year-old kid who went out to Bolingbrook, stole a car, stole a Jaguar, and then ended up in a high-speed chase, and then ended up on foot and ended up getting shot in the back and killed. And is, you know, we've had protests around the city today. I know there was one tonight, Brian.
Yeah, it was an impromptu protest over on 71st in Jeffrey in the South Shore neighborhood where O'Neill grew up. And it was a nice amount of people out there. They blocked the, a metro rail line right there on 71st and Jeffrey. And they had that blocked off for a good, hour or two, you know, and that was big. It was just out of the blue. It just popped out of nowhere.
Right. And hey, listen, I am pro protest. Have nice, give me a nice peaceful protest. Let's do it all MLK, Martin Luther King style. Yeah. I think that's definitely it's slow but steady, and you what you end up doing is having more conversation, which makes me wonder, by the way, and I don't think he's going to say anything, but, like, you know, I normally do the sports show here on the weekends, the Beat, 3 to 7 on later today and 3 to 6 on Sundays. And I love what's going on as far as athletes stepping up right now. Carmelo Anthony sort of led that with an Instagram post saying we've got to do better. And then finally, you know, the greatest athlete's ever done anything in this city, and you could argue has done anything anywhere, Michael Jordan, stepped up. And, you know, I thought it was pretty convenient that he spoke when he did because people had already spoken. And I'm just looking for some leadership coming from all over the city and professional athletes. Dwayne Wade, you're capable. And I know he's brand new here, but he did grow up here. And he has a certain level of clout. So I just different ways we can move it forward. And so there earlier today, a news conference, the most heartbreaking thing was seeing O'Neal's sister, Brianna Adams, 22, and she gets emotional, you know, telling reporters that her brother, that he had goals and that he, you know, he had graduated high school and he wanted to go to trade school. And I know I feel like there's just not a lot of sympathy for a guy, too, that goes out and steals a car and gets in a high-speed chase.
Yeah,
so there's that.
Yeah, and when you're, like I said, when you're 18, you're not thinking. And maybe, you know, he was just running with the wrong crowd.
Clearly.
And, he, you know, when you want to be that cool kid, you want to be with the cool kids. Look, being in the gang and stealing cars and selling drugs, it's not cool. It looks, you know, the money looks good. They make it look flashy. But all that glitters ain't gold. It's not.
Well,
I promise you that.
Well, and also, like, you know, when you see his sister speaking, you see, this is not a kid, at least from what I can tell, that came from, you know, absolutely nothing. His sister looks pretty well put together.
Yeah.
I mean, right? So you know, this is it's just super unfortunate. End of the day, on all sides. A bunch of people want to weigh in here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are happy to continue the discussion with you, Larry. You're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Larry.
Hello. I'm a senior, and I live in the Washington Heights neighborhood.
Okay.
Around 95th and Halsted. And it's a pretty comfortable neighborhood with a lot of, you could say, retirees of the black urban middle class. Now, I think that if the problem of violence is to ever be resolved in some of our communities, we're going to have to take a really deep look at the problem and realize that a certain culture has been created over a number of years. As your guest says, that has different, well, you could say maybe has different kinds of values, where it is easy to move into a violent attitude. I mean, it's reflected in most of your video games. So, I mean, it's just a culture that we are all generally facing. But here's a solution. A month or two ago, our mayor mentioned that he had formed an alliance with Dunbar High School, or they call it, whatever they call it today. But he had formed an alliance with the construction unions that would allow young people to become apprentices under organized programs.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they graduate, then they can get union jobs. Now, this last week, Superintendent Eddie Johnson said, look, if you give me a bucket and if you filled it with jobs, I will be able to go into the community and change a lot of things for you. What has happened is that a culture has formed over years which has refused to allow young black men, young black boys, an opportunity to feel good about themselves, that they can have good futures, that they can have good jobs. We had union training here in a school called Washburn Community College during the 80s.
Right.
But when they saw they were going to be integrated, do you know what they did? They moved to the suburbs.
Larry, here, we appreciate the call. And, Brian, I mean, you can speak to this, what Larry's talking about. I mean, you grew up, last I checked, you're an African-American man. You grew up in Inglewood.
Yeah.
So where did the optimism come from that you're sitting on WGN radio today and that you've worked in radio for, what, 20 years almost now?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just me just expanding my horizons and just having positive people around me. And I will say part of it, too, was the era that I grew up in. I grew up in, you know, the early 80s. And I was exposed to so much stuff, you know, in the 80s, it wasn't, you know, now I hear kids saying, where you play the black music, where you play the white music. There was no black or white music, you know, in the 80s. It was just music, you know. So,
you sure?
I'm positive.
Really?
You can, back in the 80s, you can hear, I mean, you can turn on a radio station and you heard Hall & Oates. So you heard.
Yeah, okay.
You're on,
right.
on urban
I
radio.
I would say that. Oh, you would?
Yeah.
Okay.
You hear okay. those. You hear it.
I mean, Hall & Oates was ringing out of my house.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I had some good You Make My Dreams Come True.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you heard that type of music, you know, no matter what neighborhood you're from. Now, it's like I said in the last segment, you hear only one type of music. And it's all negative, and it's a negative aspect, and kids are sponges, so they soak all that stuff up.
Well, and he's, you know, Larry's just talking about the video games, and maybe it's not the same thing, or I know that Call of Duty is a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, okay, I mean, I'm a 40-some-odd-year-old man. I grew up playing Galaga and Space Invaders, and we were shooting things, you know, Centipede, I was shooting, I don't buy that. You know, you play a video game where you're shooting things down that makes you want to go out on the street and do the same thing. I mean, that's a pretty big leap to me.
No, but Larry did hit something on the head, though, about the apprenticeships and stuff like that. I used to, back when I was part-time at another radio station, I did teach radio production for a program called After School Matters. I think that program is still around. And when I taught, I was teaching kids from freshman year in high school all the way up to senior year. And they paid them like a stipend, you know. But they came in and they learned radio production. I'll teach it for an hour or two. They didn't get paid right away. But the fact that they knew they were going to get some kind of funds just for sitting there and learning
a skill?
A skill. You know, that made them really sit there and soak it up. And honestly, they're about four or five kids that are currently working in Chicago radio that I actually taught in, you know, back then. And I feel good about that.
You should.
Because when I first met them, I will say they were a mess. I mean, seriously, they were a mess. They didn't want to. It was like, I'm tired of school. I'm like, where are you going to go to college? I don't want to go to college. I just want to find a job once I get out of high school. I'm tired of school. So, you know, it's a way you can get through to kids. You know, a lot of people may say, well, you're just throwing money at them. It's not throwing money at them. Sometimes you have, you know, every kid is not the same. They're not. So you have to find what interests them and get to them.
I mean, you're making an investment in the community. And by the way, if the schools were better in the urban community and you had more funds allocated, then perhaps there would be. And I understand that it all starts at home. Let's not get it confused here. But if there was more money and there were better leadership in the schools, then maybe you would have less violence and you would have less innocent people getting killed. Yeah. And then your whole city benefits by making that investment, right? I mean, I don't think we're going out on a limb here. But we haven't done that for whatever reason. And it's forever. We're shutting down schools, and we're busing kids, you know, across town to get them an education with 40-odd kids in a classroom or more, which is clearly not the answer. And I understand that we have a lot of budget issues in this city and in the state. But, you know, education to me and having decent schooling, that's something we should be invested in, team. That benefits all of us.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's not where we should be skimping. 312-981-7200 as we continue on with you on 720 WGN. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Patrick.
You know, I really wanted to, I got to say that I want to stick my neck out a little bit in the naivety of the naiveness of the people that are accepting that a young man can go out and steal a car, blah, 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 go out and, you know, run into police. This started way before he stole the car.
Of course.
And this started way before, I'm sure this young man was involved in the court systems before. As I'm sure if you look it up, it'll show it. And
okay.
It is not a problem that can be just a black issue. It can't be it goes to the community and to the court systems and to how we deal with troubled youth. And our troubled youth, which your gentleman who is your guest is hinted on.
He's my co-host.
Your co-host. I have, you know.
He actually has a full-time job here, and I don't. Just for the record.
Sorry, I didn't catch his
name. Just for the record. Brian Altimer.
Brian, I'm sorry, yeah. Brian. which Brian hinted at is, you know, I'm an older gentleman, and I worked with troubled youth through all my 20s and 30s, that there were programs and there were options that judges, that families, that when a child was 14, 15, and it was obvious that this child was not going to fit into the norm of the school system, the norm of his family. His family was having problems. There were options, and those options are completely gone now. And I just don't agree with the whole thing of, oh, it's the police, oh, it's this, it's this. It goes back further, way before this child stole the car.
You're 100% right, and that's what we do as a society. We kick things down the street, right? We kick the can down. We don't want to deal with it now. We don't want to invest in our youth. We don't want to. We do it all over the place, right? We do it with the environment.
Trade schools have probably been the complete ignored since, you know, I mean, you have a child of any ethnic, any background that can't make it in a public school. You know, there were options. There was great options that families could go, my child is out of control and I need something. And they would raise their hand and go, somebody help me. And there were options. And they don't allow, and I even mean, even if they have to go to prison. I mean, if the child has gone to an adult and they've gotten to a point where they're 18 years old, and they can't control themselves and the family can't control them, well, then maybe they have to go to the severe. But there's so many things that we have given up on to allow a child to actually experiential education and get into something that takes them out of that mindset and lets them go, I can be successful. I don't need to run around the streets. And you know, I really bother me of the sister talking today going, well, you know, my brother was great, and we, you know, when he used to take me for walks, and we'd walk around the neighborhood. Well, you know, walking around the neighborhood, all you were exposing your brother to was the hood. You weren't exposing, you never gave that kid the out to say, okay, we know that you're struggling, and we're not going to allow you to struggle anymore. We're going to remove you from your comfort zone with your boys, with your girls, and we're going to move you, and we're going to send you somewhere. And that used to go on, as Brian said, you know, Brian grew up in the 80s. You know, I grew up in the 70s. That went on every day. Kids were removed, and they were put in places because their parents, the school systems, even if the police were involved, the public service system said, yes, we're going to remove this child, and we're going to put him into a developmental program because we already know that he is not going to make it in the standard programs,
Patrick,
of public education.
Patrick, we got you. Great call. Appreciate your passion. We got people behind you, so we'll end it there. But thank you for your thoughts. We'll comment on it right here. Listen, I mean, he's talking about getting to the root, which I appreciate all day. You're also, what also resonated with me with Patrick saying, he's talking about vision, right? Like, you got a kid and you want to show him what's possible and talk about what's possible and have belief. You can be X, Y, Z, whatever you want to be, the president of the United States. Sure, okay, it's cool that you want to be an athlete. I want to be an athlete too. And you can work super hard to get there. But, you know, we got to have some parallel goals here too.
Yeah.
Or at least, you don't even have to have a parallel goal, but at least, you know, get your education. Yeah, I don't, like, you know, I got a 9-year-old niece who loves soccer. And I said to her, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I want to be a professional soccer player. But I know that's not going to happen. Don't be taking those cards off the table. You're 9.
Right.
You know, and whatever. So it doesn't have to be, you know, even if the goal is unrealistic, I think it's important to instill in kids that anything is possible. And if you don't have that person around and in your family, you don't have a community leader doing it, I mean, that's a huge issue. And we see it all the time. That's not necessarily directly what happened, you know, with Paul O'Neill, but it's part of it, right?
Yeah, it's definitely part of that. On a final note,
not final. We got another hour and a half.
And I was sitting here thinking while he was talking about all that. I was thinking, like, where's the mayor? Where has he been? Like, I can remember a time, at least during election time, that you could not get him off your TV screen. And we have not seen him, I guess, since we lost that Lucas Museum. You know, and where is the mayor? I mean, this is this is his town.
He's been hanging with Hillary. Where he's, you know, trying to get a little national FaceTime.
Right. And for all those people, I didn't vote for the guy. You know, because
good for you.
I saw through all this. So, you know, for all you people that voted for him, start asking yourselves, where's the mayor?
We'll continue with Rom coming back. We got a 15-second timeout. Is that what we got? 15 seconds, then Roger Badish's news on 720 WGN. I just want to read one text from the 773. I cannot believe what I'm hearing. First, it's the school's fault, the teacher's fault. We're not throwing enough money at the schools. LOL. It's the parents' fault. Oh, my God, can you people just say the truth? It's how they were raised and who they were raised by. How many times have we said on the show, Roger Badish, that it does start at home? But is that 10 times, 15 times, 20 times?
I think 10 times 10.
10 times 10 would be 100.
Yeah.
We've said that, 773. What do you think?
It's not a one-answer
right.
problem. It really isn't. It does it start at the home? Sure, it starts at the home. But if the home already has issues that may or may not be the parent's fault, then it doesn't start with the parents. It starts with services. It's outside services to help support the family. It starts with education. It starts with jobs. It starts with a whole bunch of stuff, and it's not just allocated to one part of a community. It's all over the city. We've got a report, a shooting on the West Ridge neighborhood. That's the far north side, West Rogers Park. There was a shooting there already within the last 3 hours. It's all over this city. I'm sorry.
No, it's good, Roger. Hey, let it out. We appreciate your passion. 720 WGN, good morning. Or happy late night to you. 3:40 in the AM. Be on the tennis court today at 9. Big match, Brian. Big match at 9.
You taking on Bill Leff again?
Not Bill Leff.
Oh, okay.
No big. I'm too intimidated by Bill Leff, Roger.
I know you are.
Guy scares me.
I know.
So we've been talking for the first hour and 40 minutes on the show on the shooting, the fatal shooting of Paul O'Neill. And by the way, my name is Mark Carmen. You are Brian Altimer, although I learned that your podcast name is what?
Sean Green.
Why is your podcast named Sean Green when your name is Brian Altimer?
Okay, so a short story here. My middle name is Vashon.
Okay.
And so and Green was the first street that I grew up on. And so when I started this little podcast, I was like, Brian Altimer, people are not going to like that. So,
B.A.
Well, yeah, I could have went there, too. Then people started thinking about the A-team. So,
what's wrong with the A-team? Love the A-team.
There's nothing wrong with the A-team.
So Mr. T right now.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to call myself Sean Green. And I've been doing that for years. So that it just stuck to me. And so that's like my little alter ego is Sean Green. So when I take off my glasses and let the cape out, I turn into Sean Green.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. I mean, I think you should go with your name.
Yeah, I think I will. I think I will from now on.
Okay. Okay. So you really? You're going to make that move?
I think I will.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. I think we just had a big intervention here, and Brian's owning more of himself on the show, which is it's a huge move. Getting back on topic here as we steer you straight. Here's just, if you're just joining the conversation, videos from the fatal shooting of Paul O'Neill by Chicago police show a succession of apparent procedural errors, including police firing at a fleeing vehicle with other officers in harm's way, and an admission by the officer who believed he fired the fatal shot that he had no idea whether the 18-year-old was armed, which he wasn't. And then you had... you know, the police had tried to stop him 7:30 on July the 28th in the South Shore neighborhood as he drove a Jaguar convertible reportedly stolen in Bolingbrook. And two Chicago police vehicles were struck by O'Neill, and two officers fired at him while he was in the car. Then O'Neill fled from the Jaguar, and a third officer chased him behind a home and fatally shot him in the back. And that's what we're talking about tonight, and where we're at in the city as we continue to go back to this point. Let's let Kathy jump in here. She's been hanging for a long time on the overnight. Kathy, thanks for your patience. Welcome
Hi.
To welcome to 720 WGN. Go ahead, Kathy.
Good morning. In the past few weeks, I've just been watching the news, and I see a lot of the protesters with signs that say Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And all lives matter as far as I'm concerned, but why is there so much black-on-black killing? You know, it's like they're killing their own, and yet they're protesting to the wrong people.
Well, okay, hold on a second here, Kathy. First of all, on the Black Lives Matter thing, that is you're supposed to realize that it means all lives matter. They're not saying that it's just
right.
Black Lives Matter. So, I mean, let's start there.
Okay.
Brian, you can take it from there.
Well, and I can just actually just answer this in a few ways, but, you know, there was a time where there weren't cell phones, you know, and I can tell you a story that happened to me. I want to say it was like late 90s. And drove out to Gurnee, Great America, a few of my friends. I was about 19, maybe 20 years old. And
want to ride that demon.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So, you know, go to Great America and stay there till it closed. We decided to go get something to eat in the area. You know, sit there. You know how you sit down and eat.
10 o'clock at night at Denny's in Gurnee.
Yeah. Okay. So you sit there, you eat, and you're done. So we need to get gas to get back to Chicago. Now, we get halfway there. I get pulled over by the cops. I'm in the car with three other of my friends.
All African American?
All African American.
Okay, so we got four black guys in a car in Gurnee.
In Gurnee.
11 o'clock at night.
In the late 90s.
In the late 90s, okay.
So cop pulls up. Hey, why are you guys doing out here? I'm going to say guys. He didn't say guys. So I'm going to leave to your imagination what he said.
The letter that comes after M?
Yes. So what are you doing out here? Oh, we was at Great America. Great America closed a few hours ago. We went and grabbed something to eat. Why are you out here? We're grabbing gas. He goes, okay, I'm going to follow you guys to the gas station. You're going to get your gas. I'm going to make sure you guys.
Guys get, again. Not
exactly.
Guys.
Make sure you guys get back on the expressway and get back to Chicago. If not, I'm going to kill you guys. And that actually, that's not a lie. That really happened.
It's more than wrong.
And that's during a time with no cell phones. Okay? Yeah. So, this is stuff that's it's been happening. It's out in the open now. You know, and we're seeing more and more of it. So, when we see it, and back then when we used to say that actually happened, we had no proof. And a lot of people were saying, you're crazy, you're just saying it. It's not, you know, it's one thing to lie about it, but it's another thing you have the proof right there in front of your face, and then you still have people saying, well, you did something. It's something you did, you know. So it's really right. Frustrating. I mean, honestly, Mark Carmen wouldn't have to go through that. A young Mark Carmen wouldn't have to go through that. But I would. So that's why, you know, you see these protests out here because, you know, even though it may not happen to that black person at that moment, it could at any given moment. So that's why the protests out there, people are frustrated that they feel like they don't have a voice. We vote, you know, to hopefully have somebody that can represent everybody as well as us, you know. So when we don't get that, you know, and we're constantly ignored, then you get the protests. You get all right. That. So that's why you hear that.
Well, I just, you know, I value life tremendously, and I think all lives are important, and I really wish that more blacks would respect blacks as human beings and not as targets, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, it's too bad you had to go through that, and I'm really sorry for you, but I just see these protesters, and thank God for protesting because I believe in it. And, you know, I just wanted to get your take on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what this country, I mean, First Amendment, I mean, that's what, you know, when I served in the Marines, that's what, you know, we serve for. We, you know, so you can have your opinion, even the person that may have a different opinion than me, or that racist, or that KKK member, if they want to say whatever, it can say it. You know,
right.
That, it's America. You can say what you want to say, no matter how crazy it is. Even Trump, if he says something crazy, he can say it. It's America, you know. So I think that you know, the whole protesting thing, it just gets the conversation out there. It makes people aware. We're talking about it. You know, you didn't understand why we have these protests, and we had a great conversation just now why we have that conversation. So,
and you did that, Kathy. You spurred that conversation, and you waited for about 40 minutes to do it. So you get tip of the cap to you, Kathy, for stepping up and asking the question, right?
Thank you, and I have a good night and be well.
Yep, you as well. Thank you. And listen, what you're talking about, Kathy, you know, there's plenty of African-American people that don't want to see African-American people killing African-American people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's your raise. That is a fine question to throw into the conversation tonight. And thank you for doing it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of prominent black athletes. Charles Barkley would say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have to take care of our own house. I mean, he said it numerous times. Jim Brown would say the same thing too.
Yeah, and people got on Barkley about that, and I thought people should not have gotten on Barkley about that, because it's, like you said, it's true, because, you know, people, at least from what I see, you know, I've seen, there was a story that happened about maybe 2 weeks ago here in Chicago where the kid got arrested, and the police had to let him go because I believe they hit him or whatnot. They hit him, and it was caught on video. And they got out in front of the cameras, and the entire family celebrated. And
what were they celebrating?
They were celebrating him being released.
New release, right, okay.
And it was, like, the worst, like, video I ever seen of somebody celebrating being released from jail or whatever, because they were gloating about it. They were totally gloating that they were getting released. And later on that day, I read the late edition of one of the local papers here, and he gets arrested again on gun charges. So with that being said, it's like you can't sit here and do wrong and then turn around and say, oh, the police brutality or the police out here doing wrong. No, you're out here doing wrong, and you have to fix that.
Right. And that's at the end of the day, I mean, we can talk about having better parenting at home, and we can talk about having better social service, and all that stuff is enormously important. But there are certain incredible people out there who have dealt with enormous hardship, and somehow, some way, they were able to open up their eyes and look around and pull themselves up all by themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, and they deserve enormous props for that. And I grew up, you know, privileged North Shore kid. So I had all the best of it. And I own that. And if I didn't have some mode of success in life, that would be, I wouldn't call my childhood perfect either. I mean, I lost my mother at a fairly early age, which threw a wrinkle in some things. But I've had the best of it. A lot of people haven't, but some of them have pulled themselves up. And you don't want to make a pity case, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Say, well, you just have this, so you had no chance. No, man, like, I understand that it's stacked against you, and I appreciate that. And I think you should get every benefit of the doubt, and people should try to open up doors for you. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just got to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, we are all, on some level, we are all on our own out here, right?
Right.
No, at the end of the day. And the sooner you realize that, the better off you're going to be. Linda, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes, your previous callers all put everything more or less in line. But one thing I can't understand is why, now the young man said about the mayor. You know, the mayor can't do much of anything. Sure, he can give police and everybody orders to do things. But I was raised in this neighborhood. I'm in what they call the Millgate area. We had Millgate, Bush, and South Chicago, East Side, and Hegwisch, South Deering. We all grew up. Our parents were either steel mill workers or worked in Solo Cup or someplace, Richie's Box Factory. And we all went to the same school. We all went to the same grammar schools. Some kids went to the Catholic schools. But it seems as though there were kids that come out of the schools that really did well. We all had the same teachers. And I've heard people say, well, the teacher didn't teach. Well, why is it that 10 children out of that class, and at that time our classes weren't small. Some of them had 30-plus in them. They put an extra desk in the classrooms. I was in one class once that had 39 kids in it, and we had one teacher. And you didn't get out of line because they had a truant officer that went to the house to see why the child wasn't in school, or else if they were giving problems, they would go see the parent because the parent would say, well, you had, I can't go. I don't have a babysitter.
You had accountability, now, Linda. That's real accountability. There was consequences, which is a hugely important.
But now I'm still living in the area. Last week, a block and a half from my house, a lady moved in to these Millgate, Germano Millgate apartments. First day she's in, somebody drives by and shoots at a young man that's out there. She gets killed. He gets shot in the hand. Now, everybody talks about who belongs to what gang or whatever. But the thing of it is, nobody comes up and says, hey, he's responsible. No one takes responsibility. Parents will say, not my son. He's 13 years old. He's out on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning. Why is he out there at 2 in the morning?
It's a fair question,
Linda.
He
should be at home.
No, you're not going to get any argument here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
You know, and they'll say, I can't do nothing with him. My dad passed away. My brothers were 12, and the twins were 7. My mom raised them. No father. Not once did she have to go to the police station for them. And they were raised here in South Chicago. There was all kind of gangs and stuff around, but they had the fear of mama in them.
Well, right. Thank you, Linda, for the call. I mean, that's a big fear.
Can I add one thing?
Go ahead,
Roger. Mentioned it, that there were truant officers in the schools that went around looking for the kids. It was a great thing. Those truant officers haven't been in schools in about 20 years because they got cut. Now it's up to the individual teacher to call home after every class period to find out why a student was not in their class. The teacher doesn't have time to put together lessons, doesn't have time to teach. They are on the phone calling home. And, of course,
and no one's answering.
Well, a lot, though, because 20, 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, one parent was always home because one parent was working. One usually stayed home, or an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent were staying home. So there was always an adult in the home. Nowadays, there aren't any adults in the home during the day or at night because they're all working, or they may be absent, or some other situation. Society has changed in that way in a lot of our neighborhoods, unfortunately.
Good add-on, Roger. That accountability that Linda was talking about, people need it, man.
Yeah.
They're people, like, you know, just look in the mirror. Do you do everything that you should do every day? I know I don't, but if I got my boss all over me, or if I have, you know, my girlfriend or wife or whoever who I'm accountable to, well, it's a lot more likely that I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, so people need that in anything. That's why, you know, you need a support. If you're trying to lose weight, or you're trying to get off drugs, or you're trying to stop drinking, whatever it is, people need accountability. They need somebody to step in there who you're reporting to, because they have a hard time doing it for themselves. I mean, that's pretty universal on whatever barrier you're trying to get through. All right, quick timeout. We'll get Roger's news at 4. You are listening to 720 WGN. You like this one, Mr. DJ?
Yeah.
That's a no.
I can dig it.
Who is this?
Sounds good. I don't know who it is, but it sounds good. It's a little poppy.
Ellie Goldie? Is that right? Ellie Goldie? She has that high-pitched voice. That one.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I like the instrumental, but I can deal without the vocals, though.
I like a good vocal there. I'm not taking anything off the table. I want the whole... The whole deal. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Brian Altine. We're sitting in for Matt Bubala. One more hour to go. And then Orion Samuelson will be here at 5 o'clock. We have spent the entire show talking about what's been going on in the city with Paul O'Neill, 18-year-old kid, fatally shot by the police. Protests going on around the city. And we a couple sound bites that we haven't played, and then we can get to your calls, 312-981-7200. Eddie Johnson, who's the new police superintendent, spoke, and he explains, you know, the police department released nine tapes of the incident where you've got a car chase, you've got officers on foot, you've got shots fired, and... So here's Eddie Johnson, the new superintendent, talking about how there hasn't been any tampering, even though the officer that shot Paul O'Neill, his body camera was not working.
At this point, I don't see anything that suggests any intent to disable the equipment. And after the video comes out, you'll see what I mean.
And so we've seen the video, and I don't know what he means, because there is... There's footage after, there's footage before, but there's no footage of the actual shooting.
And that's the one that has everybody like, okay, I don't believe anything that you say at this point.
Well, the other side of it is also like, why do we need to exactly see the video? The dude was shot in the back after he leaped over a fence. I mean, what, do we really need to see exactly what that looks like?
You have to, because remember the recordings you played. There was discussion amongst the police officers of whether O'Neill shot at them. Now, if you've got video of the police officer who actually fired the weapon that hit him in the back, that video would show whether he had a gun, whether he turned to shoot.
Yeah, but he said that it's on record, Roger, that he did not have a gun.
I understand that, but now you have video proof.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, you know, it comes down to a court of law, the police officer's word against the visual evidence available.
No, I got you. And listen, if the video would be that much more incriminating.
Oh yeah.
No question. But I'm taking the leap that we don't necessarily need the video to figure out what went on here. But you're talking about the audio we played earlier as far as the confusion with the officers. If you missed that, here's one piece of that.
Yeah. And they shot at us too, right?
I shot at the car after it almost hit you.
I'm a f***er. Are you okay, bro?
So did you shoot? Yes. Did you shoot? Yes. He shot at us, right? Not sure.
No, he didn't say he. He said they shot at us.
Right.
So now there's confusion. They don't even know how many were involved.
Right. That's accurate, too. The attorney that has been retained by Paul O'Neill, his name is Michael Oppenheimer. And we got a lawsuit going on here. And I would, and Michael was on earlier today with Roe, correct, Brian?
Yeah, he was on with Roe.
So this is a piece from the show earlier today as far as how Michael Oppenheimer, the attorney for the O'Neill family, is looking at things.
I think there's more video that will probably come, and the bottom line is it's just crazy to me that the officer that actually shot Paul O'Neill, his body cam, they don't have that video. They said it's not working. I question that since everybody else's is working. I think there's way more questions than answers at this point, but these officers clearly screwed up. And what's disturbing to me is in the video that we have seen, they're basically high-fiving each other while Paul lies there dying, handcuffed behind his back.
So, you know, and Michael is obviously representing the O'Neill family, and you were there for the entire interview. Was it basically that tone the entire way, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was that tone, and it was more of you know, they could have done way more than just shoot him in the back. You know, there were way more options that they could have taken other than shooting him in the back. They, at one point he did say, look, this was just a theft. It wasn't a, I don't want to quote him on this. I think he said it wasn't like it was a, like a felony. It wasn't like it was a violent crime. He just stole a car. You know, and in my mind, I'm like, a crime is a crime, but it doesn't justify being shot in the back.
Well, right. And I mean, again, not a wise choice in life to go out to the suburbs, steal a Jaguar, go joyriding, get in a high-speed chase, and now you're terrified of going to jail. That's at least how we're guessing at it. And you end up getting yourself killed. Horrendous choices all around. However, again, stealing a car, as our, one of our police officers that called in earlier tonight, it's not capital punishment.
Right.
So, but I think clearly what was going on here is that you got in a high-speed chase, shots were being fired, it was a competitive nature going on, and it wasn't about the car at that point. It was about a whole lot more. Okay, let's get your calls in here, 312-981-7200. And the conversation tonight, if you're just joining us, is spawned from, you know, I guess, you know, what's fair here and to just the overall societal issues that we're running into all the time, right? And how to perhaps move things forward, which I think on some levels we're making incremental steps, really, really, really tiny ones. And then you see something, then we just, you know, go flying backwards. Tom, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Tom.
How are you doing, Mark and Bryant and Sean Green there? listen, guy, I mean, you know, this is a hot potato. I've been listening for the last year. The caller before Kathy, he had the society aspect of it down. But, again, guys, the end results is what it is, and everybody has an opinion. And I've been listening to Bryant. Bryant, you were very quiet when a gentleman spoke, and I'm surprised you didn't intervene, but I understand. The situation that we have here, and just to answer Bryant's earlier question regarding the mayor, the mayor has been visible. He was visible for the presidential library that's going in Jackson Park. Situation isn't 100% in City Hall, but it's better than what it was, and I'm sure he's having agonizing pains over what has happened, because I question it myself. I mean, given the highlight of everything that's been going on, to wake up and find out that you have another problem of a back shooting is very questionable, and in light of everything that's going on. And, Mark, I'll say to you that the Superintendent Johnson is no longer new. I'm not sure where your cutoff point is, 90 days or 120, but he's been on the job for some time
now. Okay, fair enough. I mean, he's within the year to me is new, but oh, that's fine. If you don't think he's new, I'll come with you, Tom. That's cool.
I would prefer you drop to new, because
fair enough.
You know, I know they do a lot of interviewings with the prior one, but, again, you got a situation, and that comes down to training. I mean, there's a black on black problem in the community as far as the eradication of young black youth among young black youth. There is a problem, but society has had a problem over the decades, and it could go way back. One of your associates there just dug into the archives of the Tribune newspapers regarding crime. And its development over the decades. If you ever take a look, I can't think of the young lady's name right now. And Roger hit it. And Roger hit it right too regarding the absence of children officers. I mean, that's now put the work on our teachers. But again, the education, the training that goes into our men in blue. And I am a person that believe in the rule of law. There's something wrong with that, and I think that's where the issues are. I mean, there has to be better training and scrutiny of our men in blue, because it's the few that makes it very hard for the many.
Great.
That's the real problem. I mean, again, if you look back over the decades, the Italians, the Irish, the Polish, blacks, we've had issues in our community, and as you had stated earlier, people have risen themselves out of poverty and put themselves in better communities to educate their kids and give their kids a better chance. Otherwise, we would not have the Schaumburgs and Burringtons and Springwoods and what have you spread out all over our Chicago land. And the end results is really the key here. I mean, it really exacerbates a situation that puts us in at odds, in questioning and scratching our heads over why.
Yep.
I mean, the situation started in Bolingbrook, and it rolled all the way over to the east side of Chicago, the South Shore of Chicago, and if there was proper training, given everything that's been going on, I mean, for the end, like it ended, and then you have this gap in the video, and that goes to what Brian was saying earlier, is that that's the real, I mean, that's the question. But again, Mark, what you said, it doesn't take away from the end result of what happened, and the fact that evidence has been brought out, and people on all sides have been out front about what happened and what's going on. It lends itself to something that that goes back to training and trying to root out
right.
Psychological aspects of the people that we put our trust in blue. And that's a problem that the mayor has, it's a problem that the superintendent has, it's a problem that society has in terms of that young man and understanding that if you, and I hate to say the word, put yourself in a situation, given the current circumstances and the fact that we have to root the problem out all the way around, if a perp or a potential criminal put themselves in a situation where something like that could happen, I don't know.
We got you, Tom. We appreciate the phone call. Okay.
There was a lot there.
There was a lot. That was 5 minutes worth of time. Actually, 5 minutes and 47 seconds, which if you want a transcript of Tom's comments, you can email Roger Badish and he will.
Yeah, sure.
You'll get that. But I appreciate Tom's passion. He's talking about better training. I mean, that was the theme of Tom's call, right? It is hard at least in Brian, being a Marine Corps vet, you can't simulate a situation like that.
No, you can't. And I was just getting ready to say, I mean, how much training do you have to have? I seen a lot of people that, they called in and they want to say, well, why did he run? Why did O'Neill run? Okay.
And we've hypothesized that O'Neill did not want to go to jail.
Right. And after listening to the audio and seeing the video, and one of the things that got me was, what if a shot wasn't fired? That he just got chased.
Right.
And he got cornered, and he had nowhere else to go but not one shot. Not one single shot was fired. Would he have just stopped the car? Would he just gave up right then and there? But the moment that first round was fired, that scared. It's kind of like, I recently adopted a dog. And
good for you.
And I took her outside on the 4th. Oh. And that was like the wrong thing to do. And
4th's an aggressive time.
Right. And so the minute that first pop went off.
Right. She was terrified.
She was terrified and took off. And when she took off, she didn't care if she was on that leash. She didn't care how strong I was. She was running. She didn't care if she was choked. She needed to get into the house.
Right.
So in retrospect of everything that was said this morning, if that first shot never went off, it would not have startled him to the point where he said, I have to get out this car because I'm going to die.
Well, but, and that's, maybe that's true. But when you watch the video, though, I mean, he's trying to skirt his way through a couple of cars, right?
Right.
And then that's when the first shots were fired.
Right. And that's what I mean. That first shot, when the minute he got fired upon, that's when he decided, okay, I need to get out the car. I need to run.
Well, he also got it, but he had a car accident, too. He crashed into a police SUV.
Right.
Which at that point, you would think, I mean, you're obviously outside yourself there, but you would think you would get out of the car, hands up, and you know,
yeah.
don't shoot. But that's, you know, again, rational thinking. On either side at that moment was clearly not going on. Donald wants to talk about training. Donald, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, man.
You know, everybody keeps talking about police training, and I'm one that believes in logic, and it's like this. No training can train the psyche of a mind in a highly stressful situation, and that doesn't matter whether it's the police officer or the assailant, because everybody's stressed. Everybody's, you know, in a high tense state of mind.
Yep.
So no training is going to help no one.
Donald, and I think that's, you know, appreciate the call. That's what we just said. I it would have to be a really, really, really intense training, and it would have to be done by really, really skilled people to be able to simulate. Hey, we're gonna be able to put you in a spot where you really aren't going to be able to think rationally. We're going to make you so stressed, and we're going to have that much conversation around it that when a situation like this happens, we're in a high-speed chase, and the dude's... But, you know, the other side of it is, too, I mean, it's not like... This guy, as wrong as he was, he did not have a gun. The officers were not being fired at. So it is kind of... That's where it gets confusing as to why the officers felt like they were under so much stress. And, you know, you're chasing after a dude who stole a car. You know, you're not in a hostage standoff. And again, you know, I'm not a police officer, and I give tons of credit to those who are. It's a job that I would never want to do. But it is confusing in the situation where you... Yeah, okay, he's completely out of his mind, and he cracked into a car as well, a police vehicle. But again, you know, and the police, I guess, you know, they were the ones shooting, yet they thought that there was so much confusion that they thought that perhaps, you know, it was the young man who was shooting when it wasn't, in Paul O'Neill. So there was mass confusion.
Yeah, and I just think... after this, you know, will this be the last one? And every time we have something, especially in this town, whenever we have some kind of shooting, whether it's police involved or if it's gang related or whatever, and it captures the nation, will it change? And are we willing to make that change? You know, and it's more than just having a conversation sometimes. It's about action. It's about doing what you're supposed to do, you know, as a citizen of this town. So do we, at this point, crawl back in our little corners and just say, hey, that's...
Right.
Your problem. That's not, I don't live on that side of town. It doesn't happen to me. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to just go back to my little comfort zone, and I'm going to come down to the loop and party and do whatever. And I don't care about what happens on the south and west sides of Chicago because it's not my problem. Well, guess what? One day it may just get to your town.
Well, and it does all the time. I mean, listen, I work on the north side. Somebody got shot, two blocks from me. You're talking about you work in Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
Somebody got shot last night. 608 texting. Why would he raise his hands and say don't shoot, given the recent police shootings of people being shot with their hands up? That's a fair text. I can't even, why would he do that? Well, because running and going over, leaping over a fence and sprinting away,
doesn't help the cause.
It's not going to help you either. Listen, but I get it. I get it. There's when you don't trust the police, and you're coming from the community that he's coming from, maybe he thinks that's his best option. I get your text, 608. It's 815, what happened to the use of tasers? Well, this dude's running. There's no chance, they're not catching up to him.
So, yeah, the what's the limit on the taser? It's within like 4 feet, I think.
Yeah, and I don't,
something like that.
Right. I mean, in the video, like, they're showing cops trying to get over the fence, and they're having trouble getting over.
Yeah.
So they weren't catching this guy. All right, quick time. I will get into Rogers news. We'll drop late for that, and then we'll get more of your calls in here. 312-981-7200 at 720 WGN. 81 degrees in that lake. You coming with me after the show for a little swim, Brian?
Why not?
Let's do it. Huh?
Do a couple of laps.
Get out there. I think there's a little 10K, 5K, Big Ten Network. BTN 10K today.
Yep.
7 a.m. for the 10K, 8 a.m. for the 5.
Why not?
I was going to do that, but it didn't quite work out. I got a big tennis match at 9 o'clock today. You going to be there? 9 a.m., baby.
I think I'm going to be in the bed.
Yeah, see, some of us just,
Hey, Brian, how was the overnight hanging with you there?
Oh, you know what?
Brian works at a bar until 3 in the morning. It's like nothing for him.
Yeah, but you don't do that every night, do you?
Not every night. Normally,
okay.
Normally just on the weekends. But I will say this has been a very long day because this has been like my second home today. I've been here since, I want to say like 11, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
This place looks like home. I need to, get like a couch and put it like on the side here.
Wait, isn't there a couch up in Club 720?
No, I want a couch down here so everybody on Michigan Avenue can see me sleep.
We have 20 more minutes, sir, and then you can head on out to All-Timer Dreamland, and Orion will be taking you over for your morning. And good morning, by the way, 440. I'm Mark Harmon. You are Brian Altimer. We are sitting in for Matt Bubala this evening. Paul O'Neill, 18-year-old, who was shot by the police, shot and killed. We've been talking about that really the whole show tonight. I had a whole thing on the Don, good old Donald Trump, who... is just imploding beautifully right now, but we'll save that for another time. Dan, you want to jump on in about the young man did have a weapon, being his automobile? Go ahead, Dan.
Oh well, yeah, it just occurs to me that I think this whole thing escalated right then. I was a paramedic for 15 years, and oh, by the way, Brian, thank you for your service.
No, thank you.
But I think the minute he used his car and hit those squad cars without any regard for the police that were in them or around them, I haven't seen the videos yet, but that immediately kind of sealed the fate of what was going to happen. It's my understanding the shot started being fired right about that time.
Hold on, Dan. It was actually before that. This one police officer had tried to wall him in, and he was able to skirt on by, and that's when the shot started. And then he had an SUV, a police vehicle, coming at him. He kind of tried to swerve out of the way, but they ended up colliding, and that's when he got out of the car. So it's just...
My point was is that when it escalates to that level, and, I mean, you got to keep in mind that these guys, I guess, have been in a police chase with him, and now they see the level of violence has escalated to a squad car being hit. Regardless of what the intent was, and now he gets out. Now, you guys said this happened in the middle of the afternoon.
7:30 at night.
Well, my question would be, is if this guy had gotten away and there happened to have been a child that he grabbed up to use as a shield or to defend himself, people would be asking why they wouldn't have shot him sooner. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the level of violence escalated the minute they started crashing cars.
Right. No, I hear you, Dan. I hear you. And,
you know what I'm saying? Now, like I said, I was a medic for 15 years, and we used to get 5 shootings a night, and I worked in mostly an all-black community, and I've seen more young black people's lives ruined than anyone should in 3 lifetimes, and the shooting's got to stop. From the perspective of that, it's not what you want to see, and it just gets worse and worse and worse every time you turn on a TV.
Well, you said 5 shootings, Dan. I mean, Roger just had in his news there's been 11 shootings tonight since 11:30 p.m. I mean,
I'm just saying that when I was on in my career, we were getting 5 a night. And,
yeah, I know.
You know, and I'll take another thing about that. Over that 15 years, not one of them ever made even the newspaper.
Wow. Ouch.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
no.
There is a mindset that I think that needs to be to address. And some of these young guys, now I talk to them, some of the shooting victims even, and they have told me themselves they didn't even think they'd live to 30. So, whatever reason they were doing whatever they were doing, they figured that they were on borrowed time anyway. And that's sad.
It is.
In my opinion.
No question.
And so, I just would hope that some of these guys, you know, if you look at some of the enterprises that some of these young men have set up in the drug industry and have made millions and took those smarts into a different direction, they would be kings of industry. Because let's face it, it's not easy to make millions of dollars, that quickly. And what a lot of these young guys see is that money, and that's what draws them in. It's a violent, violent way of life, and let's face it, it ends tragically almost every time.
Dan, appreciate your call. You just went into a direction that is a long bit of interest to me. I have my own solutions as far as the drug portion of the inner city, which is, if they, let's just say, at 4:46 in the morning, in a hypothetical situation, if they legalized all drugs today, right? They go out and legalize cocaine, legalize heroin. Am I going to go run out and buy myself any of those and be like, oh, sweet, now it's legal?
No, probably not.
No, most definitely not. 100% no.
No.
So what would you be doing? You could, and at the bare minimum, some states are legalizing marijuana, right?
Yeah.
This state, correct me if I'm wrong, we are broke, right?
Yep.
We're trying to figure out ways to pay down, make sure the pensions are actually, there's actually dollars in the coffers, right? And our real estate taxes are going through the roof. And they're going to tax the utilities more. And they're trying to find every dollar. How's this? We actually legalize something that is less dangerous than alcohol by any rational person's opinion. We tax it an enormous amount. We use that part of that money for prevention facilities. And by the way, you also perhaps take away some of the illicit. Take away some of the fighting that's going on over territory.
Yeah, that.
I mean, I don't see a huge downside here. Call me crazy.
No, not at all. I will say the criminal mind is really. It sounds like a Batman thing. But seriously, the criminal mind is interesting because one of the things that I never thought would be an issue in Chicago. It's a crime no matter how you slice it, is the selling of loose cigarettes.
Okay.
It's big. You can't, if you hop on the red line and the minute you hit, actually any stop on the red line, you have people selling loose cigarettes.
How much is a loose cigarette?
I don't know. I don't smoke, so I don't. I have no idea, but apparently they're making money off of it because cigarettes are so expensive. It's cheaper to buy them. I guess in their minds, it's cheaper to buy a loose cigarette than to buy an entire pack.
Right.
Because some people may not, they probably can't afford an entire pack. They can afford maybe a few cigarettes. But there's a huge market in loose cigarettes. So, and cigarettes are legal. So, if you legalize drugs, let's say marijuana, at the least, you legalize marijuana.
Yeah.
You do that. You will put a dent into the funding of gangs. You will. Will it stop it in the long run? Probably not, because they'll find something else that's illegal that they can sell.
Like what?
Well, loose cigarettes is definitely one of them. I don't know, they won't make as much.
Ain't gonna be. We're not talking about the same type of dollars.
Yeah,
I don't think they're gonna be fighting over turf for loose cigarettes. I'm gonna sell these loose cigarettes here. It ain't happening.
Yeah.
Well, there's also loose cigarettes and then there are blunts.
Well, right.
Or yeah. similar type.
But that's my
smoking
point.
Devices that don't just have regular tobacco in them.
But in my dream utopian world of save the world here, Roger, that's going to be legal.
All right. I understand.
630 saying you lean libertarian. We've been saying legalize everything for years. You'd also be taking money and power from the cartels and the gangs. I have some libertarian in me, 630. Yes, I do. I'm not running from that.
Yeah, it's also the stigma of just legalizing drugs. I think the majority of people are just not ready for that yet. I mean,
well, at what point? I mean, come on, they're ready for it in Colorado.
Yeah, and they're making money.
Well, they've already
ready for it in Washington, right?
Rauner last week signed a bill decriminalizing up to, and I forgot what the amount was, where you don't get arrested, you get a ticket. For marijuana.
Right.
It's a small amount.
Right.
I forgot what it was.
We're heading this way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt. It's just the slowest crawl of all time. And
I want to meet that first person that gets that ticket for the marijuana, by the way. I've yet to hear of anybody getting that. What is it, a $200 ticket that you get?
I forgot. I'll have to look it up, but I forgot what the cost was. It wasn't a lot. In other words, they're trying to decriminalize it, but still show that it's not a good, they don't approve of it. So I don't know if it's too much money. Or if you like driving a moving violation, you get, what, 3 in a year and your license is taken away or something like that in the state. I don't think it's anything like that.
I'm reading up on it right now. It's a minimum fine of $100.
Okay.
And a max of $200. So I want to meet that person that gets busted with, let's say, about a dime bag of weed and they get a $100 ticket. So I want to meet that person and see and ask if it was really worth it. You know, just legalize it. You know, just do it.
312-981-7200.
By the way,
conversations spawned all over the places around.
Also, wanted to bring something out, Mark.
Go ahead, Roger.
That I think one of your earlier callers said that they had found or thought they had found a gun in the car, and there's excellent, excellent step-by-step, second-by-second analysis of the videos and the initial reports. Done by the Chicago Tribune, our great sister newspaper, where there was a question by one of the officers whether or not they had found a gun in the car, and there's been no confirmation about it. And when they got the suspect, he had a backpack on him, and they found a screwdriver in the backpack.
Right, in the backpack, that's true. We didn't mention that. He did have a backpack on him. It did have tools in it, which I'm sure were the tools that he used to go and
break into
the car and steal the Jaguar in Bolingbrook.
Right.
Which is just, if we start at the very beginning, let's think about the mindset. I'm going to get in a car. I'm assuming you didn't take the train out there. I'm going to get in a car. I'm going to, with whoever he was with, I'm going to look for an opportunity in Bolingbrook and go on a joyride in a Jaguar. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, how is it?
And then drive it back to Chicago.
Yeah, and to do what? I just...
Well, to joyride.
Again, not a capital punishment, but just like the whole mindset is just completely incredible. And I'm not Johnny Perfect here. Let's, you know, back in the day, 18 years old, that would be around about the time that, well, we got to go back to high school when I was delivering pizzas and maybe perhaps overcharged some people in the neighborhood. Terrible kid. Just not that I needed the dollar that I was trying to get out of you, or the extra, maybe bump it up like 72 cents, so I would feel like I'd get that extra buck in tip. Not that I needed it, but it was exciting. Like, that was my level of debauchery and patheticness.
Yeah.
But, I get the whole, like, looking for, I don't know, being young and being stupid. But this is a whole other level. And, again, it doesn't mean that he deserved to be shot in the back running away. Robert, you feel a cop did the right thing? Go ahead, Robert. You might be our last caller on 720 WGN of this show. Go ahead, Robert.
If he decided to steal a car and then run away, well, he got what he deserved. I'm kind of a racist.
Okay. At least you call it straight, Robert.
The Boomhauer car? Oh my God. That was... Yeah. I was not expecting that one.
Well, I'm kind of a racist. I don't think you might want to take out the kind of, but at least you called yourself out, Robert. We did say earlier that's the beautiful thing about this country. You can, I think you said that, Brian, right?
Yeah, say whatever you want.
And you actually said it without using profanity, so we can leave it out there like that. Well, wasn't it, I think it was Barkley again who I'm referencing. He started talking about how, you know, there's racists in the South, there's racists in the North.
Yeah, it was probably with Barkley.
Right. He's like, at least in the South, I know where you stand.
Yeah.
In the North, I'm not exactly sure sometimes.
Yeah, that person will be standing next to you and turn around, you got a knife in your back.
Right, right.
But.
Good morning, Saturday, 4:54. Yeah. Little positivity. Hey, we'll take one final timeout. We'll wrap it up after this, 720 WGN.
We're coming back a little bit on Wall Street.
Westerners aren't very good at bragging, but we're going to try. This guy has been reporting on agriculture and business on this station for over a half century. He's seen it all.
Rates continue to drop.
Ups and downs. Trends, bubbles, bears, bulls.
Some of the headlines we're dealing with in the stock market this morning.
Markets can be a dartboard.
Commerce Department said to
let Orion help you aim. Learn something with Orion Samuelson on 720 WGN.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Chicagoland competes in the Olympics.
I'm from Lockport, Illinois.
Naperville.
I'm from Northbrook.
From Wheaton, Illinois.
Libertyville.
The Wintrust Quest for Gold. Listen all weekend on 720 WGN.
Good morning, 4:55. I'm Mark Carman. He's Brian Altimer. Talk to Orion Samuelson in a matter of moments. Any thoughts before we do that, Brian, wrapping it up here? Your first show, and we had the heavy topic.
Yeah, I feel really good, and I'm glad that I got a chance to kind of ride the training wheels and kind of break them off with you. Hope to do this again. I had fun.
Awesome. I was great being with you tonight, man. I thought you did a outstanding job, and it was a conversation that was most definitely worth having all night.